Hello, you are listening to the Nintendo Switch UK podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode number 192 of the Nintendo Switch UK podcast. I am a slightly under the weather, slightly snotty, slightly growly Al because I've been ill, but I'm here. Anton, you're here too.
I am indeed. And yeah, sadly, we have no mic. You know, it's very sad. What shenanigans is he up to this week? Do you know, Al?
Oh, he's currently away riding a mouse across his garden. He decided that he wanted to undertake an epic adventure, and he thought there was nothing more epic than using that shrinking machine that he got to shrunk with a couple of months ago. He got shrunk back down again to the size where he can ride the back of a mouse, and he's riding across his garden having a little adventure.
Wow. The new shirt, Little's taken a weird turn, but nevertheless, it's lovely to have yourself join us once again on season 5. You know, next week I might take it off, and then it's, you know, keeping everybody on their toe that we can't all three be in the same room.
I know. But actually, you know what? This is my first episode back, so we now need to talk about what I was playing over Christmas.
We do indeed, which I hope is an extensive and illustrious list.
Well, it's longer than my usual list. I'm going to admit this. Normally I come on and say, I play Mario Golf, and that's it. But over Christmas, I did actually have some time to game, and I played a variety of things. So I'm going to start off with a game that we've mentioned before, but I went and bought it. And over Christmas, my family have pretty much not stopped playing it, and I have spread the good word to many other families around my friend group. They've all gone and bought Boomerang Foo.
Oh, very nice. It's, yeah, I feel like I'm not quite up to date with it. Do elaborate to the
Brilliant. It's just a party game. It's a really simple party game. I think its full price is something like £12 or something. You can probably get it at sale. It is just really, really simple. You play as various little food items running around an arena, and you throw boomerangs and try and slice each other in half. Or you hold the boomerang and slice each other in half. Basically, there's a lot of slice each other in half based on food. That's it. The premise is so simple, but my God, it's so much fun. Everyone that plays it goes away going, I need to buy this. I need to buy it right now. So if you've not played Boomerang Foo, and well, why haven't you? Because we've mentioned this before. Go and buy it, because it's great.
It's, what else? Delve in. What else have you been playing this holiday season or former holiday?
Well, for Christmas, I got the Assassin's Creed Ezio Collection. So I've been working my way through Assassin's Creed 2, which I hadn't played before. I thought I had, but I think I've only played the first one and then jumped to Black Flag. So been playing that. I have bought but haven't actually started Sports Story, and I bought and haven't started Eastward yet. I may have played a little bit on the Xbox too, where I played an awful lot, and I do mean an awful lot, of Viva Pinata. It is such a good game.
Every day I'm like, I want the Rare replay on the Nintendo Switch. It would be so at home, especially since we've gotten, you know, GoldenEye, we've gotten the Banjo-Kazooie games as part of the N64 game collection. You know, even though Viva Pinata was never really on Nintendo with the exception of the DS game, I'm like, bring it home.
We need it. It's just such a perfect game for Nintendo. It has Nintendo vibes written all over it. It is brilliant. So I played a bit of Viva Pinata, played some Plague Tale Requiem, played some Jackbox, played a fair bit of Mario Kart 8 because, well, you know, there's constantly new stuff coming, which is wonderful. I played a brilliant game with Mike called Alpaca Ball, which is hilarious and stupid. There is no other way to describe it. You are pretty much playing as alpacas, whacking balls with your floppy necks. It is dumb fun. As is Gang Beasts, which we played. That is also dumb fun. Mike hasn't quite figured out how to, you know, grab with both arms, lift and throw yet, which means I'm kicking his backside. In fact, actually, he and I had a games night where I kicked his backside at that constantly. Then we played Killer Instinct. I kicked his backside at that constantly. And then we played another game and I kicked his backside. And by that point, he'd had enough and he went home.
Wow.
But the game that's taken up most of my Christmas has been Star Wars, The Skywalker Saga. I love that game. I love it so much. I think I started playing at the end of season 4. I'm still playing it and working my way through getting all the collectibles. I'm going to 100% this game.
And incredible. What kind of route are you taking? Are you starting from episode 1, working up to episode 9? Are you jumping in where you are more a fan of the franchise? How are you taking it on?
I worked through from episode 1 to episode 9, and I played it all the way through. So I kind of did the story, didn't get too bogged down in the collectibles, just went through, picked up the odd collectible here and there when there was one that was very obvious. But generally, I've got to the end of it. I've saved up all the coins. I've got all the stud multipliers, which means that you can then just fly through, pick up everything else you need afterwards. And I've 100%ed the first two films. I'm onto the third film about halfway through. I know one of our patrons, Daniel, in our Discord, he's been doing the same thing as me. So yeah, it's a great game. Have you played it?
I haven't. I've seen my roommates play a good bit of it. I think it's been bought maybe 3 times in this household, and I've seen a lot of it. And I must say, I'm very, very impressed by the scope and scale and detail of it. It just looks like one of the meatiest games that you can buy, and I've seen it very, very cheap for such a new title sell. And yeah, I think if you're a fan of Star Wars or the Lego games, it's probably one of the best values you can get.
Yeah, I'd say it's back on form. It's back to where Lego games should be. It's really engaging. It's really fun. It's importantly stable. I have had no issues with it, and that's been my biggest problem with Lego games in the past. The quality was just rubbish, whereas this one, I think maybe they might have had a patch at the beginning, I don't know, but it works. I have had no issues with it, and I'm happy about that.
Yeah, it looks like quite a game. So has that been the highlights of your time off?
That has been the highlights of my time. What have you played this week since your last episode about a week and a half ago? We should say, by the way, we do apologise, we are slightly late recording this. You may have noticed we're not recording it on Sunday like we're meant to. We may be recording it on Thursday. We're like 4 days late. Sorry about that. Yeah, schedules and illness and all kinds of stuff got in the way. But in the last week and 4 days, Anton, what have you been playing?
Well, I have quite an exciting one. There has been some new little things. I started Spider-Man Miles Morales. I finished up a Halo event. But the big highlight is I finally completed Sonic Frontiers. And on the last podcast, I kind of loosely mentioned this, but now I've been able to play it. I 100%ed it, wasn't quite attempting to it, but then I kind of finished the game. I was like, oh, I've got every achievement, which I guess I was enjoying it, thankfully. I think it is one of the best Sonic games that we've had since the Adventure era. It's not perfect. There is some flaws. And I got very apprehensive midway through because I was enjoying it, loving it, having a blast. And then I got to basically the third act and the quality fell off a cliff. And I was like, oh dear. But thankfully for me, I was fairly well upgraded by this point. So I got through the third act and then it picked up in the fourth act. And the fourth act was brilliant up until the final boss that was dreadful. So
interesting.
Dips and dies. So not a perfect game. I think as a Sonic fan, you'll look past that and you'll have a blast. I think for less keen Sonic players, you know, that third act might be just the drop-off point for a lot of people. And to be honest, I understand. It just felt a little bit repetitive and it just had a bunch of gameplay decisions that I felt were quite poor. Final boss, that's a different question. You're so close to the end, you'll probably get through that. But it was a little bit disappointing of an ending. However, I think this lays the foundation for a new generation of Sonic games, and I'm hoping that's something they can build upon. The open world aspects of the Sonic games, I thought this was just going to be a wrapper, then you would just be like, I want to get to the levels, which are kind of done in a similar way to the shrines in the Legend of Zelda games. But those levels, once you got in there, you're like, I want to get back into the open world because Sonic works so great in an open world. You know, I wish some of the platforms and the obstacles and the elements that you're interacting with were more rooted in the world and just not floating around. However, being able to have so much space means you can be so much faster, and it makes this very fast platforming feel, you know, natural. You know, you're not like on these super tight, windy courses or having to land on tiny platforms. You're doing these big, massive jumps that, you know, land on a variety of platforms. So you can do these big, massive jumps. So you can then have so many different options of how you traverse this open world. And that's something I hope they can build into. There is a bit later on in the game where they apply this kind of large form platforming to a more strict level. And that was the best 30 minutes of that game where that's the direction I think a Sonic Adventure could go. Big, large levels with this movement set, and then also giving the player basically an accelerator, like a racing game. They tried this in Sonic Lost World, but it was still slow even at max speed, but this game is proper fast even when you're walking around. So giving you an accelerator means that you can do this tight, kind of nimble platforming when it comes up, like any other platformer, but it means you can then have that fast breakneck Sonic stuff. And then with it being a much longer Sonic game, it actually has a combat system that works and builds up over time. It's not just mashing a button. I was very impressed with this game, despite its flaws, and I'm very excited to see where they go next. I hope they don't just hit the reset button and then try something new next time, because I think they have actually done a good foundation here and developed what was the Boost formula into a just more general, kind of fun, innovative, and unique title. I think they've done a great job here, Al.
Wow, Anton recommends. That's that's surprising and impressive. Dare I ask, I'm sort of hesitating to ask, what platform did you play it on? Was it on Switch or was it on something else?
So I was skeptical of whether or not it could run on Switch, and then I played it on Xbox Series X. And again, this loops into my criticism of it, is I saw it running on the PlayStation 5, and there was pop-in.
Wow.
And there's pop-in on the Xbox Series X as well. And yeah, for that, to be honest, I would try and get on the most powerful console you can get it on, which is a little bit disappointing that it does have that pop in.
Oh, well, I mean, it can't be perfect. And as you said, it isn't perfect, but if you like Sonic, worth checking out. That's really useful. Okay, let's move on, because we're 11 minutes in and we've not even started the show, technically, really. And before we do, however, I do have one little announcement. We have a new Patreon! So we need to do a little Patreon woohoo! So, let's give a nice woohoo for Luke. Woohoo!
Woohoo! Thank you very, very much for joining our Patreon. As we mentioned in the last show, we've recently revamped it, so we appreciate the support as we've got this kind of new tier. For people that aren't familiar with the Patreon, I'll just do a quick run through. It is now £2 per month, which comes out to about £24 per year. You get a bunch of different rewards, including getting the main podcast without ads. You get live recordings of the main podcast on our Discord, live right now, listening with the wonderful Moxies in the chat right now. And we've got little comments and us. Lovely. We also do a bonus podcast called Last Call. We do live recordings of that Last Call as well. Early access to the show notes, so the podcast is 4 days late. You can read up beforehand. And you also get access to the lovely Discord, where we have a bunch of different channels. We do the shout out woohoo when you join. You get our friend codes for the Nintendo Switch, so you can see what we're playing and not playing and playing too much of. And you get access to the back catalogue, which we've done shows like the prequel roundup and tons of Last Calls. So about 270 episodes of all that. So tons and tons of stuff to go through, Al.
That is a lot of stuff. So yeah, come join the fun. Come be a Patreon. And join Luke. Thank you very much, Luke.
Tell us. The people want to know.
Well, I guess the big news this week, which is going to come as no surprise to anyone, is we had a Direct. I think last week, when you and Mike were talking about it, we were planning on doing a Direct special, but because of schedules, that just didn't happen. So, should we talk about the Direct in this show, Anton?
Indeed, it's a lot to cover, so we're going to have to rapid fire, despite how much I want to delve into each and every one of these.
I know. You can always do a special on it as well, if you want. If you really feel a burning desire to elaborate more, you can do. Right, we'll go through it, and then we'll give our general overall impressions. So, I think that, well, the first thing they revealed, which wasn't really a reveal, was they showed us more of Pikmin 4 for the Switch, which they introduced a new canine companion, and they gave us the release date of the 21st of July 2023. Without spending too much time on this, it looks good, it looks very Pikmin-y. I didn't really have any particularly strong feelings about it, but I liked playing Pikmin 3. I may well play Pikmin 4 at some point. Where do you stand on it?
Yeah, I've never really delved into the Pikmin franchise. However, this entry, I think with the more focused and zoomed in camera, makes it feel the most accessible it's ever been. I think when it's so zoomed out in the other ones, you're like, oh, there's thousands of them and they're all doing things and they're flying around. What's going on? This one, it seems a little bit more detailed, accessible. I'm intrigued by this one. I'm tempted.
Indeed. Next up came, there was an update on Xenoblade Chronicles 3. They announced Expansion Pass 3, coming from Nintendo and Monolith Soft. The expansion introduces a couple of extra characters. We've got Masha and a new roguelike challenge. It's set to come out on the 15th of February, which is yesterday, actually. And then they also tease an upcoming Expansion Pass Volume 4 for the Switch, which I suspect is of no surprise to anyone. I don't think we need to dwell on that unless you've got anything particular you want to say, Anton?
Yeah, nothing more to add. Just great to see them trucking along and, you know, at such a swish pace.
Jolly good. We then had an update from Sega, who announced Samba d'Amiga Party Central for the Switch, a rhythm action game that features motion controls. Game's going to be released in summer, and I gotta say, it looks quite good fun. I am a sucker for a good fun kind of a party game, particularly to get you moving a little bit. I like the look of this one.
Absolutely. I think the success of Super Monkey Ball has just opened the floodgates for us getting some retro Sega revivals. And this is top of the list. I'm greatly happy to see some of these classic Dreamcast era franchises come back. I just hope they bring back Crazy Taxi or Space Channel 5. You know, there's so much great IP there. Jet Set Radio. My God, they could go any which direction.
Oh, I'm ashamed to admit, I have no idea what... was it called Space Channel 5?
Yeah, it's like a weird space TV show dancing game.
Awesome. It's I love the sound of it. I'm on board. Bring it back. Next up, we then got Marvelous, who showcased fashion designer, a fashion life simulator game for the Switch. The release date is, well, some point in 2023. I don't think either of us have probably much to comment on that, so I can move swiftly on and talk about Motion Twin, who revealed Dead Cells Return to Castlevania for the Switch. Now, we saw this previously, so again, this wasn't really new news, or we certainly knew about it. I don't know if we've seen it. This game is set to be released on the 6th of March. I think it's probably worth talking about this, because Dead Cells was a bit of a hit for SimRound, wasn't it?
Absolutely, and this looks like to be carrying on the torch. It kind of reminds me of Cadence of Hyrule in the way of taking an incredible indie dev, giving them the IP to really get their name out and to get new players in. And yeah, this looks absolutely stunning. The gameplay is slightly more Dead Cells than Castlevania, I guess maybe slightly closer to Symphony of the Night in terms of combat, but it's looking really solid. It almost makes me wish Konami made their own Castlevanias, but alas, we have a great DLC for a great game. I think there's, you know, this is a guaranteed hit, I think.
Absolutely. Bithel Games then showed us something new, amazingly. Tron, Identity for the Switch. It's a visual novel scheduled for release in April of this year. And I've got to say, well, no surprise, it's Tron. It looks cool. Very neon, very dark. And I like the fact it was a slightly different take on a Tron game. Normally, they're very tied to the movie and a bit dull, but taking the visual novel approach is something that we've not seen before.
Absolutely. And I think it's very novel of them to have not just made a arcade party game of just trying to collide these bikes into them. You know, it's such a compelling gameplay mechanic in of itself. It's basically why we love Astro Bears. you know, they've done it in Grand Theft Auto. They could have just made that game super easy, but no, they've taken a slightly different route here, and they're going into this kind of world. I think the, you know, cyber digital world they've got here, you know, is still something that is relevant for today. I think they could do something interesting here.
I agree. Next up, Capcom showcased Ghost Trick Phantom Detective for the Switch, a time-bending murder mystery that's expected to be released in summer of this year. I thought this looked like it should have promise, but for some reason I walked away from it being feeling a little bit cold.
I am completely the same, Al. Almost as cold as the dead bodies. It was a title that, you know, looked like there's a lot of time and money put into it, but it didn't look polished. It looked a little rough and unfocused. You know, it's an established franchise, so hopefully this is in line with what people expect of Ghost Trick, but for me, it just didn't look it. It looked a little bit dated, maybe if it was like a port or something like that, but yeah, not in love.
No, we then got our first JRPG of the Direct. Normally the Direct is just packed with JRPGs. I suppose technically we had already talked about Xenoblade Chronicles, so it's not really the first one. But this one was Deca Police, revealed by Level 5. It's an action-packed JRPG that is expected to be released in 2023. They didn't really give us much to go on. We got a little bit of action thrown in there. I don't know, very JRPG. There's not much more I can say about that, Anton.
Yeah, it's very visual. They've got a lot of things going on. There's a lot of moving parts. It almost reminds me a little of slightly Persona vibes, slightly Tokyo Mirage Session. It's got a lot of moving parts. I just hope they line up well, but it's definitely got the style to back it up. They're doing something bold here, and I just hope they stick the landing of it.
I know, it's funny, it was a weird one, because the characters looked very polished, very JRPG, but the environment that they're in that they showed us, it all looked very low polygon and bit blocky, and it looked a bit, I don't know, last gen, two generations ago, it sort of looked like they'd taken new characters and chucked them into like a PlayStation 2 game. It was a, I don't know, it just felt a bit odd to me, but I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. They then moved on and talked about a game we'd previously seen before again, Bayonetta Origins, Syriza and the Lost Demon, coming out on the 17th of March. This is sort of the origin stories of Bayonetta travelling through the woods, a completely different take on the Bayonetta franchise. Instead of being all action-packed-y, it's more of a sort of top-down adventure, Anton.
Indeed, it's definitely a bit of a curveball for the Bayonetta franchise. And I'm dubious of this title. You know, they took a very stylish, fast-paced action game and they've made it kind of slow and a little bit boring. You know, we've seen some of this last Nintendo Direct and we've been shown, you know, a couple more minutes of it. And I don't feel like I've learned much more. I'm just not in love with it. It just doesn't have the energy and style that, you know, I enjoy about the Bayonetta games. I'm just on the fence here.
I am really intrigued by a specific aspect of this. So what we saw, I found it really hard to see what was going on. It was not a good game to look at if you're colourblind. Did it look better to a normal eye? Was it easy to distinguish what was going on? Because to me, it all looked very similar and I really struggled.
Nah, it looks very samey. It's kind of got a full watercolour aesthetic and like all of the edges of the screen is faded. So there's like 60% in the middle that's like in color but it's still slightly washed out watercolor, so not to diss watercolor, but it all kind of had the same sort of beige look overall.
Good. Okay, it wasn't just me then. Next up, we got some more news on Splatoon 3. Their expansion pass is DLC that's coming out. We're getting Wave 1, which is Inkopolis, coming out in the spring. And they also announced Wave 2, Side Order, which will be available at a later date. Inkopolis is pretty much bringing back the old world from, I think, the first Splatoon game, and Side Order is very white.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At the Gaming Blender, we take randomized genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out the Gaming Blender on all your favourite podcast platforms now.
Yeah, this is absolutely bizarre, where we had this kind of nothing DLC where they showed off the hub world from the first Splatoon, which, to be honest, I think they've made better ones since. They're very good at making games, Nintendo, so they've made better ones since. And then they're like, oh yeah, there's all these different shops that have the exact same thing that you can buy in the normal Splatoon 3 shop. And it's like, okay, that's maybe a cute small DLC, and you know, part 2 will be like, you know, the hub world from Splatoon 2. And then they're like, nah, we're doing something completely different here. So we have no idea what that second part is. But it looks infinitely more interesting than just adding the hub world back from the first one. So I'm hoping it's not just another hub world, but that looks very interesting. I want to see more of that. I'm hoping they've not made a big DLC and just unveiled it with a small DLC. That's kind of the impression I'm getting here.
It was very weird. I just don't get why they made such a big deal of a hub world, because they spent the entire time going, oh yes, everything you can buy and everything you can do is exactly the same as in the other one. So, well, what's the point? Why are you wasting my time?
Exactly, and it's not like people play it for the hub world. We're playing it, you know, it's literally to just go to the other game modes.
Yes, weird decision. Next up, we had Disney, who showcased Disney Illusion Island for the Switch. It's a co-op platformer set to release in July 28th, and I would describe this as my first video game.
Very much so. It's, you know, I would love to love it because I have so many fond memories of the Illusion games on the Mega Drive and such. And I like that this one's co-op. It's given me slight Rayman Legends vibes and there's just not enough co-op platformers, but it's a little bit light. It's, you know, as you say, kind of baby's first platformer. It's,
you can run, you can jump, you can swing a rope.
You know, I feel like this would be more at home on Apple Arcade. You know, somewhere where gamers aren't originally, are primarily on. It's just a little bit okay.
Yeah, I think if you're looking for a first game to introduce kids to platforming, I think this is actually probably quite a good way to do it. It's characters that they're presumably familiar with because everybody in the world knows who the Disney characters are. So sure, we're just not the target market for it. If you are a fan of Fire Emblem, and specifically Fire Emblem Engage, you might have been quite excited because they announced DLC Pass Wave 2, which is bringing along Veronica from Heroes to the game as DLC. Content is available now.
Indeed, it's looking good. It's always great to get some more Fire Emblem. They've been, similar to Xenoblade, they've been putting these out on a decent cadence. And yeah, more the merrier.
Absolutely. We then got Don't Nod, presenting Harmony, The Fall of Reverie for the Switch, which is set to be released in 2023. Talking Sim, Anton? How can I describe it? It was like a cartoon, but very much interactive, but I wouldn't really describe it as a graphic novel.
No, it's kind of got a rotoscoped aesthetic, and it's done by the team that did Life is Strange. And how I feel about this is I always found Life is Strange just looked a little bit Unity-ish. This looks gorgeous. It just looks like a much more tightly put together experience, and I'm just very smitten by it. I think they've done a great job here. And I'm just hoping that, you know, it's got a story to, you know, tie it nicely together. They've got a lot of ideas they're throwing around in of this trailer. And yeah, I think, you know, the stuff it's playing around with identity and the characters, and yeah, I'm intrigued by it. I hope it's a game that can get me into those cell of kind of visual novel-esque, I guess Walking Dead is the genre I would describe it as.
That's probably quite a good description. Next up, it would not be a direct without Square Enix popping up at some point. And sure enough, they did, but they didn't actually release anything or tell us anything. All they came along to say was that there is now a demo available for Octopath Traveler 2 and that your game save would carry on into full game if you purchased it later. So I'm not going to bother spending any more time on that unless you really want to have a rant about Square Enix.
I'll save it for when they unveil Octopath Traveler 3 next week.
Bandai Namco unveiled We Love, Katamari, Reroll and Royal Reverie for the Switch, set to be released in June, on the 2nd of June to be very specific. I gather that this was a classic that is being remastered, re-released, but it meant nothing to me at all.
Oh, the Katamari games are brilliant. It's basically, the premise is like the god of the cosmos has put you down like your son. You're like the son of the god of the cosmos, and you go down onto Earth, and then you just roll basically a snowball and just pick up all of the items, and you go from like rolling up like pieces of crumbs to like vehicles and people and like cars to like rolling up cities to rolling up the cosmos. I think it's like got messages of like consumerism and waste and all that stuff in there, but it's just pretty bonkers. It's really fun, and yeah, you're just hoarding and picking up things, and very addictive.
Next up, Sabotage Studios showcased their called Pixel Art Classic RPG Sea of Stars for the Switch, coming out on the 26th of August. Probably not much to say on that. It looks fine. Odyssey Interactive, they showcased Omega Strikers for the Switch, top-down multiplayer free-to-play game coming on the 27th of April. I'm going to describe it as football, but not, and it looked brilliant, and I love it. Not football, sorry. Air hockey. Air hockey, that's what I was looking for. It looks brilliant. I really want to play this, and the fact it's free-to-play means I might actually play this. It's so stupid, Anton.
Yeah, it was very much like, what have we made, like, Pong, a online battle royale title, or maybe not a battle royale, like an Overwatch title. Make it competitive, make it streamable, and that's what they've done here. You know, it's tough competition. We've seen a lot of free-to-plays kind of shut down recently, like Knockout City, still grieving the pain of that. So I'm very nervous for all these free-to-plays entering the market. It's a tough market, but this one looks quite fun and charming.
Indeed, we then got our old pals Atlas, who popped up to announce Entrain Odyssey, the Origins Collection. basically a collection of three classic fantasy dungeon crawlers coming out on the 1st of June. There is a lot of content in there. It's the kind of game that in the past you probably have had to sit with your pen and paper and map out the dungeon as you went through, but now it does it for you, Anton.
Indeed. I found this, like, I think it's brilliant, and it's great for people that are fans of the Etrian Odyssey franchise, but it's a bit uncanny seeing the gameplay because it has this old school, like, pre-Doom style of dungeon crawling, of going through these mazes very rigidly, but then they've just put some gorgeous artwork to it, so it looks crisp and sharp, but then it's this older style of gaming that we just don't really have anymore. So I thought it was a kind of a nice clash of worlds there. Very charming. It's nice to have it as a collection. For one fair price, I hope.
Absolutely. And then, well, we've got a game that's pretty much reared its head in, I think, every single direct for probably the last year. This should technically be the last time we hear of it in a direct. Not going to hold my breath. Nintendo showcased Advanced Wars 1 and 2 Reboot Camp for Nintendo Switch. We can probably just dig out our old audio clip and just replay it for this section here, but it's now supposedly coming out on the 21st of April. Let's see.
It's just amazing that not only has this game just been lost in development hell, I think it's even, maybe not even development hell, publishing hell. It got like preloaded onto Switches accidentally like last June or something. It was like ages ago. They basically forgot to update the preloading date in their eShop software and people got to download it and play it early. So it's amazing that it's been done for so long and they're not just like shadow dropping it. They're like making us wait even longer.
Bonkers. Absolutely bonkers. They then decided to take up some Switch Direct time by telling us about a Game Boy game. I forget where the original was of this. Nintendo showcased Kirby's Return to Dreamland Deluxe for the Switch, featuring a new Magalore epilogue coming out on the 21st of April. What platform was this game originally on?
This was on the Nintendo Wii. It was quite a late era Wii game, so just on the precipice of Nintendo Wii U. And for many, considered a great, however, didn't really have the playtime as many of the other iconic Kirby games throughout the ages. So they're now releasing it later in the Switch of life of the Nintendo Switch. Nevertheless, we don't know about the next console, so it'll do much better than it did before, especially following the Game of the Year award winning Nintendo Switch UK Podcast Game of the Year, Kirby and the Forgotten Lands. Check out the special if you haven't. And yeah, excited to see this. We got the look at the new epilogue where you're playing as Magalore in this new weird dreamscape. I wonder how hard they're going to make it. That's what I'm wondering. Are they going to give us a challenge? What do you think?
It didn't look particularly challenging, but it was very hard to tell from what they showed us in the direct itself. But you know what? It's a Kirby game. None of them have ever been that painful to play. They've always been pitched at a relatively accessible level for the most part. So yeah, actually, the Forgotten Land did have a couple of slightly challenging bits in it, but even then, it wasn't too bad, I thought.
No, not bad.
Okay, we then came to probably the biggest and most exciting bit of the direct, I think. Certainly something that's been long rumoured. They decided to give us the Game Boy in Nintendo Switch Online. Not only that, but the wonderful, generous people at Nintendo are, they also gave us the Game Boy Advanced through the expansion pass, or expansion pack, whatever the heck they call it these days. So they're basically dumping a lot of Game Boy Color, and Game Boy Advanced games into our sticky little hands, Anton.
Indeed, this is exciting news. I do think, from a business point of view, they maybe should have done this before they added the N64, but I know they were wanting to really launch the expansion pass strong, but nevertheless, this is lovely news. I think we've got a great selection of Game Boy games. Some of them are quite rare, like the Legend of Zelda Oracle of Ages and Seasons. They're expensive games. I'm really excited to play Tilt and Tumble with the motion controls. You know, that's something that's not the easiest to emulate, so it's nice that Nintendo can do that legwork for us. And yeah, there's just some quite fun titles that I think don't get the love they should have. You know, Mario 1, 2, and 3 have been ported so many times throughout the years and have so many versions on virtual consoles and such services. The Game Boy games? Not so much, especially WarioWare games. Never really been ported, so I'm very excited because there's a lot of games here that we've just never really gotten on newer Nintendo consoles, so I think for people that haven't grown up with some of these consoles, they're going to find a lot of great stuff here. I'm interested to see how they add to them over time, because the Game Boy Advance had a lot of SNES ports, so I'm interested to see what are some of the highlights they bring over to Nintendo Switch. Maybe this is when we finally get our mother-free translation. Maybe.
You can but hope. Yeah, I think it is very cool. I think a lot of people were expecting this a long time ago. It was great to finally get this, and it is wonderful to see some of these old games and be able to play them again on the Switch. I mean, it's been a very, very long time since I've played Super Mario Land 2, the 6 Golden Coins. I know we've already got the remake of Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. Well, Link's Awakening, Link to the Past. Which one was it? Link's Awakening.
Link's Awakening.
Yeah, we've got the remake, but now we're getting sort of the original experience as well. So that's quite cool. It's a nice little library. We'll watch that one grow. And let's face it, the Game Boy has an absolutely enormous catalogue that they can draw on. This could keep going for quite some time. And I, for one, am very happy about that. Okay, let's see. What's up next? Well, do you want to talk any more about the Game Boy Advanced catalogue there, or are you happy?
Yeah, I think the only thing I'm curious about is we do have the confirmation that we're getting the Pokemon trading card game for the Game Boy Color coming to the Nintendo Switch Online. Do we think we'll ever get Red and Blue?
I wondered that. I was going to say we don't need them because we've got Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee. But then again, we've already had the remake of Link's Awakening. We'll get the original. Why not give us original Red and Blues? Sure.
Yeah, I could see that being a really good incentive for people. I think there's a lot of people that just want default
retro
Pokemon.
Experience. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, we then got another relative biggie. I hesitate to call it a biggie because, again, it's something people knew was coming. They've talked about it many times in the past, but they finally showed us Metroid Prime Remastered coming out for $34.99. How do you feel about it, Anton?
This is one I've went back and forth on every couple of days since watching this direct. When I first saw it, I was initially very angry because I grew up with the Wii. So it's like the Wii came out, all three of these games were pretty much brand new of the Metroid Prime trilogy. And then they gave us this new enhanced version of the Wii for like £50. So a little bit more expensive, but they were new contemporary titles at the time on the new console with motion controls. That was a really good deal. So to see them selling one of them for £35, I'm like, that seems like they're really pinching. They're wanting basically £105 for the whole trilogy, presuming they go ahead and port the other ones down the line. Looking at it, it's a really good remaster. This is a much better than they did with Galaxy or Sunshine. They put in a lot of work here, especially updating the controls for more modern gamers. So I'm okay with it. I would pay it, but I'm not 100% happy with it. I'm kind of begrudgingly playing it because it's a classic.
Yeah, the annoying thing is, because it's a Nintendo-published game, it's not likely to come down in price.
Never.
Because normally you'd say, oh, it's fine, just don't buy it when it first comes out, but they'll release the other two, and then you can buy the collection, and you get a good value. But this is Nintendo, and their games don't really come down in price. They might do a bundle at some point, but I'm not entirely sure that they will. And I do kind of think £35 for a remaster of a really good game that is a really good remaster is actually not bad. If this wasn't part of a trilogy they were expecting to be delivered as a trilogy, we'd probably go, yeah, it's fine. But it is part of a trilogy, and we were expecting all three bits to be released originally together. And people have got their opinions based on that. So now we're all having to readjust, and £35 seems a bit expensive, but is it? I don't know. I'm a bit like you. I can argue both ways.
Yeah, like, they've done a lot of work in that remaster, but I don't feel like they've done as much of a remaster as they did with, let's say, Wind Waker, which is a similar era title. You know, it's... Yeah, I don't know. I'm on the fence here. I would very happily pay it, and it's going to be a great game. I just can't decide if I'm very happy with the value proposition of it. But nevertheless, we got it. It's good. I know there was speculation that they'd lost the source code. At least they're not charging £45. You know, that helps soften the blow a little, that they are giving a slight Nintendo discount, ever slightly.
Yeah, fair enough. Right, I'm going to run through the next three games in one go. You can feel free to talk about them afterwards. So Spike Chunsoft Inc., they showcased Master Detective Archives, Rain Code for the Switch, a ghost detective game coming out on the 30th of June. Bandai Namco showcase Baten Kaitos 1 and 2 HD Remaster, which were real-time JRPGs coming out in summer of this year. And Level 5 showcased Fantasy Life I, the Girl Who Steals Time for Switch, Fantasy Life Sim coming out in 2023. Do you want to elaborate on any of them?
No, to be honest, at this point of the direct, I ended up bursting out laughing because it felt like they were just making up video games, like an AI generator, just the ridiculous premises. It was once it got to the girl that steals time, that one was ridiculous. It's like, yeah, it's got like 50 different gameplay mechanics and it's about time.
It was all a little bit bonkers and a bit weird. We then got Level 5, who announced a new Professor Layton game, Professor Layton and the New World of Steam. And that's about all we know about it, because, well, they didn't tell us any more other than the fact it was being announced. So I don't think we need to go into great detail, but I know that will make a lot of people, including Mike, very happy, because there's a lot of love out there for Professor Layton. I then quite like this next announcement. I'm not going to lie, I like Mario Kart 8, and since the beginning of these new waves, I've been thinking these courses are great, but I really want to get some more characters, because when you play Mario Kart Tour, the character roster is huge, and lo and behold, DLC Wave 4 is adding Yoshi's Island and Birdo. Hooray! I presume it was adding more than that. I've not actually got to download it yet. Supposedly it's out now. Have you downloaded it yet?
I haven't downloaded it yet, but yeah, getting new characters, especially this late in the cycle, for the booster course pass was a very much welcome surprise. There's a story which we've got later in the podcast that expands on characters in Mario Kart 8, but you know, they're just making this the greatest Mario Kart that ever exists and probably ever will. I think this is the peak of the Mario Kart franchise we've got right here. I think it's going to have to be something different for the next entry into this franchise.
Yeah, who knows where they're going to take it. Next up, we got the obligatory montage, which included Minecraft Legends, Blonk, Mega Man Battle Network, Legacy Collection, Have a Nice Death, WBSCE Baseball, Pros, Power Bros, Disney Dreamlight Valley, and the Tales of Symphonia Remastered. Is there anything in there yet you want to tease out, or shall we just move on?
I think we move on to the biggie.
The biggie. So Nintendo showcased a bit more of The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, because I'm feeling flippant, for this Switch. It's still coming out on the 12th of May. And, well, we've got a price. Anton.
$59.99. Nintendo is finally bumping up their prices in line with the big dogs of PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X games. It is, you know, if they're ever going to do a game to do it with, this would be the one. Again, we've got we'll be chatting about that a little later in the podcast, but how did you find the gameplay they showed for Tears of the Kingdom?
I found it very Legend of Zelda. I know that sounds like a really stupid thing to say, but it kind of felt like I was just looking at and playing the last game. There wasn't really anything that went, wow. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm really looking forward to this game because I loved the last one. More of the same is absolutely fine. Give me a new story. Let me loosen the world. It's great. But all the bad guys they showed us, well, we recognise them all the moblins and the goblins. It's all the same characters. Fine. Most of this, a lot of the same mechanics were shown. Fine. I was maybe a little underwhelmed, but I'm not disappointed. Do you feel differently?
I was very happy with what I saw. I think I was just impressed by the detail. All of the parts of the map they showed were just so much more detail orientated than what we saw before. In the previous title, the new kind of vehicle building, oh my god, I'm going to lose years of my life to that. That's going to destroy me. The time control mechanic seems very wild, and I'm interested to see how that interacts with other gameplay mechanics. Like if you do like a bit of time control on one of those vehicles, what happens? Does the vehicle interact with that? What if you use your magnet powers, and what if you use all these different powers interacting with each other? Having it looks like the world's gonna split into like an underworld, kind of midworld, and then an overworld. It just looks so expansive. I'm very, very impressed. It just seems like...
I feel like I watched a different direct. I missed all of this. I'm actually rewatching it now as we speak. I'm still not seeing any of that, but I'm also not watching it at great speed, so I've maybe not reached it yet. Did I just blink and miss all this really cool stuff?
They showed the vehicle stuff for a bit. I think they're teasing that for maybe like a Legend of Zelda Direct. And then they like show bits that are in the caves, which seemingly is just more cavey areas. And then there, a lot of the things are like floating up in the sky. And then like one of the previous trailers, they showed off the time traveling mechanics. I'm just very excited for it. I think this is just going to blow the door right open in terms of just sandbox possibilities. It's going to be, I'm just very much sold. And then we've got the collector's edition in there, which.
Oh, there was the vehicle. I just saw it. I just saw the vehicle. Got it.
Banjo-Kazooie nuts and bolts up in here. We living in the future.
So yeah, there you go. It's going to be £59.99. That's in pounds. It's, I think, $69.99. And there's a collector's edition for $130, which comes with a steelbook, poster, an art book, and a set of pins, which is kind of cool. Right, that, I think, wraps up the direct. We are now 45 minutes into the episode, so I'm going to romp on through the rest of the show because we're going to run out of time pretty quickly. So, in this last week, we've had a couple of games announced. We had Asylum Square Interactive announcing Tiny Thor for the Nintendo Switch, a classic 16-bit platformer that will be published by GameForge. Get ready to take on the challenge and obstacles of this little platform adventure. It does look quite sweet, Anton.
Absolutely. It is very much 16-24-bit-esque. And yeah, just looks like polish. It doesn't look to be reinventing the world too much. I think the main gimmick in here is throwing Mjolnir and kind of using that to traverse the world, which...
Sorry, if you've not watched the Thor movies, then I will forgive you, but I know you have. It's not Mjolnir, it's Mjolnir.
I think you would believe it's called Jonathan if you ask Paul Rudd. But nevertheless, it's looking charming. Won't reinvent the world, but will put a smile on your face.
Absolutely, that is a fair summary. Q Games are bringing their chaotic party game Pixel Junk Scrappers Deluxe to the Nintendo Switch. Prepare for non-stop fun with friends and family as you dive into this delightful game, which I think was originally only supposed to be coming to PC, but is now coming to the Switch in 2023.
Absolutely, it looks to be like a Western city builder with mining aspects. My God, my life is going to be ruined between this and Tears of the Kingdom. I never thought I'd be kind of excited for a Steam build game, or sorry, a Pixel Junk game. I'm mixing this up with another game. I've forgotten this one.
This is the one where you're basically running along behind a dump truck or a garbage truck if you're American, and you're picking up a load of rubbish and fighting with your fellow bin men, I think, by looking to get it into the bin truck, and it does look slightly like Carnage and surprisingly good fun.
If you like the sound of the game I described, it's a new Steam World game. We discussed it in last week's show. I'm completely mistaken.
City Connection have announced the release of Batsugan Saturn Tribute Boosted for Nintendo Switch, which will be self-published. It's a vertical, for the most part, space shooter, which promises to offer exciting gameplay experience and will be available in May. The trailer goes to great lengths to show you all the quality of life improvements they've added since the, I think, presumably original, and the fact you can... go back, you can pause it and undo mistakes, you can turn it around and play in different orientations. They've put a lot of fluff around this game.
Yeah, it's a lot of repackaging. It's a lot of repackaging for a classic game. We've got a lot of great arcade shooters on the Nintendo Switch, spaceship shooters, so it's got some tough competition. I think this is probably one just for the diehards here.
I reckon so. Right. Now, before we move into... actually, let's carry on with the general news, and then we'll come back to and deal of the week, because in all honesty, I don't know if you have any deals of the week, so you might need some time to put them together.
Yeah, I think this is Mike's wheelhouse, so I think we'll have to wait till next week for deals of the week.
Oh, he's let us down by not being here. Okay, carrying on with general news then. There has been a decrease of approximately 7% in Nintendo's share price since the release of its financial report. Now, the financial report wasn't actually particularly bad. The company has sold 122 million units of the Switch, surpassing the sales of the Game Boys. That was 118 million, so it's been doing remarkably well. It's coming in second behind the DS, which had 154 million units. Splatoon 3 has sold 10.13 million units compared to 13 million of Splatoon 2, but Splatoon 2 has been out for an awful lot longer. And Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, after just 6 weeks on sale, is the fourth best-selling Pokemon game of all time, and Bayonetta has sold 1.04 million units. So they've been shifting a lot of stuff, but their share price is going down.
Yeah, and to be honest, I think this is, you know, not indicative of a failure of Nintendo. It's indicative of, I guess, a plateauing or a steady Nintendo. Investors don't really care for steady because if the share price doesn't really go up, there's no money to be made. So if it's just sitting stable, you know, that there's no money to be made there. So I think Nintendo's just in a bit of a stable spot right now. You know, they've not got super growth options for them. It's not like they've got a new console coming along or anything like that. But, you know, they've got some big titles and, you know, Metroid and Tears of the Kingdom. They have the Super Mario movie. They have Super Nintendo World. They're just trucking along very well. It's not really too negative here. But, you know, investors want to hear big growth, big ideas, transformational ideas that will make this, you know, a much larger company. And I think that's not quite in Nintendo's cards for the next 5 years. I think we're a little bit away from something transformational happening.
Indeed. The next story in our general news is referring to something that was in the Direct, and that was the price of The Legend of Zelda. So Nintendo have said that Zelda is going to be $69.99, but they have said that this is not going to be the standard price for all their games going forward, that they will be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. Do you think that they've put this game at a particularly high level because of the time and effort that has gone into developing it in comparison to perhaps some other games, or is it because you think they just can because it's Zelda and they know people will pay for it?
Yeah, I think we're maybe reaching a turning point in the gaming industry. And I think we've seen hints of this, but I think it's going to become far more nuanced. I think we've lived in a time where every game, well, a lot of games, especially prior to digital distribution, started out life at £44, basically. And I think as moving forward, you know, people are willing to pay more for games. I think what we've seen with the PlayStation 5 is that. But what people are not willing to do is pay £70 for Returnal. Like, that's not going to happen. I think people know what a game is worth and they have a price in their head. And, you know, Grand Theft Auto 6, people would pay probably £100 for that. I have no doubt about that. But they're not going to pay that for, let's use Returnal again as an example. And I think Nintendo is learning this, and I think we saw the start of that with the most recent WarioWare game, where they did like a survey to get a gauge of what people were willing to pay for it, and it was slightly less than the average Nintendo game. And I think we're seeing that again with Metroid Prime Remastered. I think they're being very smart here and recognizing that whereas before they would just basically charge the same price for all of their first party games, you know, back in the day they were charging like the same price for Splatoon and Metroid Federation Fortune 2015. That's madness. They should be paying you to take Metroid Federation Force. Splatoon is a classic. But we're moving into hopefully a much better point in time that, you know, games can be a little bit more diverse in their pricing. I think especially as more and more sales are going digital, it makes sense to do that method.
Completely agree. Our last story before we get into turbo mode and wrap up the Direct is again referencing Direct, which is why I've not asked for your opinion yet. So Nintendo have stated after the announcement that Birdo is going to be joining the Carters and Mario Kart 8 Deluxe through the Booster Course pack, they have said that more returning characters are coming in future waves, which is cool. I'm intrigued to know, when they say returning characters, does this mean they're pulling from the back catalogue of characters in mainstream Mario Kart games, which is how I interpret that, or would that include Mario Kart Tour, where the roster is eye-wateringly large?
I think they'll be prioritising the main series, but I think the fact that we've got Tour Tracks would imply that, you know, in Mario Kart 8, as part of the Booster Course pass, that they might pull from that space as well. I'm just kind of curious, as the strongest Mario Kart fan amongst our podcasting trio, what are, let's say, three characters you'd want to see added that are familiar to you?
Well, you know, this is kind of where I find it gets a little bit interesting, because the characters that I like in Mario Kart Tour, I like because of the particular weapons that you get with them. And that's not a function or a feature of Mario Kart 8. So in Tour, I don't know if you've ever actually played Tour, Anton, but in Tour, each character and kart and glider combination have special, I'm going to say, abilities with them, It's the best way to give you a greater chance of getting a specific weapon from a question box. So, for example, the boomerang. If you race as Piranha Petey, or Petey Piranha, whatever his name is, you're more likely to get the boomerang than you are to get any other weapon. If you race as someone with a particular glider, you're more likely to get a build-up. You race through the pack and get towards the front again if you're lagging at the back. And that mechanic is really, really important to Mario Kart Tour, and it's something that I really like and is sorely lacking from Mario Kart 8. So the answer I would give is kind of entirely different. I mean, the characters I like aren't there, or I think Petey Piranha would actually be quite a good one. He's a really good, fun character to race with. Who else are we missing that's in Tour? If I could pull my phone out right now and I could come up with a massive, great, big, long list of them. There's so many, including all the main characters with different costumes. So, I mean, you've got things like Mario in a spacesuit, you've got 8-bit Mario, you've got Mario as a chef, you've got Mario as an artist. There's just so many different versions of these characters that populate Tour. They're just missing from the main game.
You know, I would like Movie Mario. I think this is the time. Throw him in there. Have Chris Pratt in there.
Absolutely. So, I'd love to see what is going to come our way. Unfortunately, we're kind of running out of waves. I think it's 8 waves in total. We're halfway through now. Is that right?
Yeah, which it's an interesting time to start introducing these extra characters. I think this implies to me that they're finished the levels and they're just sitting around adding characters, adding value.
Yeah, like I said, I've not downloaded this latest wave, so I don't know if there were more courses, but they certainly only showed us one course and one character in the Direct.
Yes, I haven't seen many people playing it. I would presume they added the standard quota of content. It would be a bit breaking to
I will
not
endeavor
do so.
To go and download it and play it before our next episode so I can report back, because I imagine many people listening to this have probably already played it and are telling us that we are complete and utter wazzicks, for want of a better word. Okay, right, now we've stopped talking about all the kind of Direct-y stuff. What was your impression of the Direct, Anton?
Interesting. It was an exciting event. There were a lot of highlights, a lot of mid. I think for me, I can really just summarize it as Pikmin 4, Game Boy, Zelda, and Metroid Prime. So for that, it's admittedly very much held up by Tears of the Kingdom, so it did end on a high note. I'm maybe going like an 8. And I'm on the fence of that. I would maybe bump it down if I was feeling cynical, but I'm thinking an 8 for Miel.
Yeah, see, I badged this the Remastered and Recycled Direct because there was practically nothing new in it. There was certainly nothing of any interest that was new in it. It was all stuff we've seen before or DLC for existing games. Even some of the indie stuff we'd seen before, like Blanc. I think they must have shown us Blanc about 3 or 4 times now. I'm so fed up of seeing Blanc. It looks like a good game, but I'm fed up with it.
Yeah.
The exciting bit of the Game Boy and Game Boy Advance coming out online, well, again, that's recycling all the raw material. There was just nothing new. It felt like a really flat Direct. I know our Discord was really excited by it. Afterwards, there was a lot of excitement, there was a lot of buzz, everyone was very happy, and I was late to the party. I didn't see this for another 3 or 4 days after everyone else. And when I watched it, I just thought, what was all the fuss about? There were some cool little announcements, but nothing new.
I think it doesn't help that we, as podcasters, live so closely to Nintendo Switch. We're looking at it so closely, and you know, we've been covering Metroid Prime Remaster Trilogy rumors since the start of this podcast, and maybe for the last 2 years we've been discussing the rumors of Game Boy stuff, so I guess it just feels like a lot of the highlights were like stuff like, oh, finally. You know, Tears of the Kingdom's won Game of the Year for like, or not Game of the Year, most anticipated game on our awards for like 3 years in a row. So it's like a lot of stuff that we've been very familiar with as the highlights. I think Pikmin 4, because we haven't been chatting about that, is more exciting.
Yeah, and yet we already knew about that one too, and it was announced at the last one. I felt that... I maybe cruelly think that this Switch feels like it's in a little bit of a slump at the moment, and I do wonder if Nintendo and most of the third-party developers have switched their focus to the Switch successor behind closed doors. That's kind of what I get the impression we're at the end stage of the Switch. And I think that would be... Well, it's kind of sad, because obviously this podcast was set up specifically to talk about the Switch. It's not to say that when the successor comes out, we won't start talking about that instead. But it just feels like we're... at the end of that era, and we're winding down.
I think it doesn't help that we've became reliant upon the Nintendo first party again. We got a really nice rhythm there where the third party was slain, but we're kind of in a stage now where now that we're in properly into the life cycle of the PS5 and Xbox Series X, that they're no longer able to pull off these unicorn ports anymore. They're all gone, and then all of the stuff that's in the back catalog are, you know, the stuff that people are likely to port has been ported. You know, I think we're past the point of thinking we're getting a Grand Theft Auto 5 port. I think that's off the cards for at least a little bit longer. Very possibly a next Switch console, if ever. And yeah, there's just not very many unicorn ports that I'm really expecting. I think we would have seen them all already.
Right. Let's quickly rattle through Turbo Mode, because we have been recording for an hour. So, Turbo Mode. Disney Dreamlight Valley has received a release date for its next update set to come out on the 16th of February, which is today. The update will or include or does include the addition of characters Mirabelle from Encanto and Olaf from Frozen. The fourth title update from Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak is now available, adding new story elements, system elements, bug fixes and balance adjustments. VLAN Studios' Hot Wheels Rift Rally will not be coming to the Nintendo Switch. The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom is the largest first-party title for the Nintendo Switch with a file size of 18.2 gigabytes. New posters for the upcoming Super Mario Bros. Movie have been released, featuring Peach, Luigi and Mario. The remastered version of Metroid Prime does not include the full original game credits. Regarding the release of the new Game Boy games, Nintendo has stated that there is no set schedule for new releases, but each collection will continue to grow, so that's in line with what they've done really previously. And finally, Project Zero Mask of the Lunar Eclipse has received a new story trailer. Anton, what would you like to pick out?
Yes, I think to just supply a little bit more context if people aren't familiar, the new Hot Wheels Rift Rally game is the somewhat spiritual successor to Mario Kart Home Circuit, made by the same developers using an AR remote control cart. This title sadly will be only exclusive to iOS and PlayStation. Xbox seemingly didn't make the cut there, so it's a bit of an odd mix. I'm hoping we do get this down the line for Nintendo Switch. This was announced before the Direct, so I was hoping it would turn up there, but alas, there is no way of us playing this, which is a shame, because I think it would have worked nicely on Nintendo Switch. I think having this tailored to the big TV makes it a little bit more impractical. I feel like it works nicely in a handheld, which will help for the iOS versions, but sadly, no Nintendo Switch port of that. And yeah, Project Zero Mask of the Lunar Eclipse. It's, yeah, just very sad to see Nintendo kind of handing this off. You know, it's nice that they've handed it off and they're not just leaving the franchise to rot, but yeah, would have loved the great minds at Nintendo to have a kind of a helping hand in it. They're just kind of letting the franchise go on. I believe this is a port of the Wii title coming to basically everything, but at least we're getting it on Nintendo Switch, so we can't complain too much.
Absolutely. I think the three I want to quickly pick out are The Legend of Zelda being the largest first-party title. I'm surprised that the largest title is only 18.2 gigabytes. I mean, I'm used to hearing about things like, you know, Call of Duty, which have the massive, grey big, enormous downloads of, like, you know, hundreds of gigabytes. 18.2 gig, to me, sounds teeny tiny. And it's amazing they can put such an expansive game into something so small.
Indeed. You know, I think it's, I wonder if there's like conversations when they're like putting that game together. It's like, we need to have it actually fit in the Switch. It cannot be bigger than 32 gigabytes.
It is just impressive. I suspect there's an awful lot of very, very clever and old-fashioned coding going on behind in the background to make that such a small or comparatively small file size. And we all know that a lot of coding these days is very, very bloated, because it can be. Whereas when you've got limitations, people have got to get more creative and a little bit neater and better. So that's really cool. I also wanted to talk about the movie posters for the Super Mario Brothers movie. I presume you've had a look at them, Anton?
Indeed, yeah. There's some very charming ones focusing on the characters. Especially love the one of Luigi walking across a bridge very precariously. How are you feeling about them?
Well, I like them. So Luigi is looking really cool. Luigi looks like Luigi. I really, really like that. I think his is just, it is spot on. The Luigi poster is great. We've then got the Princess Peach on her motorbike on Rainbow Road, which is fine. We all know I've got a gripe with the way that Princess Peach has been Disneyfied. It's really annoying, but I'm not going to complain about that one again. But the one I think is most interesting is actually the one of Mario leaping into the air, because, well, one, Mario still looks weird, but I'll get used to that. But the piranha plants have got metal teeth. and they're on metal hinges. In fact, they're metal piranha plants entirely. I am intrigued.
I wonder if they'll have traditional piranha plants, or if this is the adaptation they're going with.
I just don't know. I'm fairly sure in some of the trailers we've seen non-mechanical piranha plants, but maybe I wasn't paying enough attention. But these ones have definitely got screws and bolts and metal and rivets and all kinds of metallic-y things, and it's looking cool. I'm so excited about this movie. And then the last thing I wanted to just pick your brain on, Anton, was the Metroid Prime credits. Why have we not got full original credits? Do we know?
We do not know. However, my speculation is we did have the rumours a wee while back that all the original Prime code is lost. So this, I think, is a confirmation of it, and maybe an indication that they have actually built this game from scratch. Which
would explain why it's a very good port then.
Indeed, which, you know, helps justify the cost of it, makes me a little bit more okay with it, but, you know, shows a dedication to the Metroid Prime franchise, and I guess an indication that we're, you know, if it was, they had time to do this, that, you know, there's plenty of time to wait for Metroid Prime 4.
Absolutely. Shh, what's that? Well, there's people speaking in the background. Oh, that means it must be time for rumours! And we do actually have rumours. There's two this week. The first one is that the Game Rating and Administration Committee of Korea, which I presume is South Korea, has leaked Sonic Origins Plus.
Woo, let's go. Oh, I'm very happy about this news. Mainly because I was very strategic. Knowing that they did this to Sonic Mania made me buy it three times. Because I bought it twice digitally, and then they announced Sonic Mania Plus, and then I bought again physically, and then I also bought the DLC for the Steam. Nevertheless,
so what does Plus mean? What is that telling us?
So this is a moniker that goes back to the Sonic Mega Collection back in the early 2000s, and basically this will just be an expanded version with more content in the form of those collections on the GameCube, Xbox, and PlayStation. The Plus moniker basically added all of the Game Gear games, which is very, very exciting. I don't think we're getting remasters of this, but I think it'll be a case of we have the, you know, main 4 or 5 games in there as remasters, and then we'll get a bunch of the B titles as extras, as, you know, emulation. So that could be Game Gear stuff, that could be, my god, that could be like Flicky, it could be Spinball, it could be Knuckles Chaotic. I'm just really hoping they just make this the definitive collection. I hope they just put in everything. I hope they don't leave things off the table, because I just want this to be the definitive 2D retro Sonic collection, and we just don't have to worry about it again.
Very cool. And the second rumor this week, I know that our Discord goes crazy about this. They have talked at length about this. There's so much pent-up excitement, and I'm intrigued to see where you stand on it. So comparisons between The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom Collector's Edition and the previously leaked console special edition have sparked further speculation, Anton.
Yeah, so upon watching the direct, and then I was like, and now they're going to show off the console. Now they're going to show off the console. And then they didn't show off the console, and I was like, oh no. But then people did these comparisons, and basically there is icons and symbols that they show as part of the collector's edition for the main game, which is official and confirmed, that have never been seen before. They couldn't have just been made up, and they're present on the leaked consoles. So it basically confirms that that design is real, which, you know, me and Mike had a little debate about whether or not it could be real. You know, Nintendo doesn't leak their limited edition consoles often, especially for such a big franchise, but this basically confirms it. I'm very excited. I'm hoping to get my hands on one of these. Will I? Maybe not. I say that about all of the limited editions. I want them all. I still don't have any of them.
Do you know, I do think we're going to get this, and I think there's a reason why we didn't see it at this Direct, because if you assume that a Direct should be roughly every quarter, I mean, they're not, but roughly every quarter, that means that this one is mid-ish February to March, March to April, April to May. That takes us to about a week before the game comes out. The perfect time to have a Direct and announce a special edition console available at launch.
I think you're exactly on the money there, and I think, you know, it makes tactical sense for Nintendo to do these limited editions in a way of just sharing, like, hey, the Switch ain't going anywhere. We're here, we're in the long haul, get an OLED, do it. And to be honest, I think a lot of people, there'll be people that have aging Switches, like myself, that, you know, this is a big title where it's like, you know what, I'm doubling down on the Switch. I'm already quadrupled down, but you know what I mean. There's people that probably bought a Switch just to play Zelda, and they're like, oh, my Joy-Cons are broken, I'll go buy some Joy-Cons, and then they see this, and they're like, £300 poorer, just like that.
Well, we'll see. And that brings us nicely around to quiz time.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to do great this time.
Yeah, it's quite hard to run a quiz with only one person. So I'm just going to declare you the victor and give you an arbitrary point.
First of the season.
Mike will get really annoyed if I do that, won't he?
Yeah, he will indeed. There might be bloodshed, and you've just recovered health-wise. We can't have you losing a head.
Yeah, he'll go back to being violent and throwing things. I probably shouldn't. All right, I'm going to retract your point. I'll keep it on ice for you, ready to give to you, presumably at the next quiz when you're presumably going to kick his backside. The quiz is prepared. I've got the questions and I've got the answers. They're ready to go. I don't know who's going to win it, in all honesty. It could go either way. So I'm looking forward to actually getting to run the quiz, hopefully next week when Mike is back with us. Is there anything you would like to close out the show with, Anton?
I think that the main thing would be thank you very much for listening. If you're interested in supporting us, we do have the new Patreon. That is £2 a month, and you get a whole bunch of rewards, such as Last Call, which we'll be going on to record next, which is our bonus after show where we talk about anything and everything.
Fantastic. As always, you can drop me a line on podcast@nsukp.co.uk. You can find us on the Twitter, you can find us on Facebook. I presume they're both still active since we went on holiday for a month. And I think that's pretty much it. So I'm going to round off the show by saying cheerio.
Au revoir.